The following is a presentation of Remnant. Finish the work you have started in me as I'm on my way to you.
Hi, this is Jerry Gotts, and welcome to Remnant Church Online. We hope that you'll find today's message challenging, full of hope, and most of all, practical. If you have questions, comments, or need a little more help on any of the issues that are raised by today's message, drop me a line at jerry@remnantchurchonline.com. Thanks a lot. God bless you, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jerry Gotsy.
Different kind of message today. I told Jeremiah there's not even a PowerPoint for today, so don't even worry about it. But we're going to talk about the three hags today. So hey, don't point fingers at each other. That's not fair. But we're going to talk about the three hags. So let's pray. God, you're so great, and you love us so much. Father, I pray that you'll open our hearts to hear what you have to say. Thanks. Bless us now. We ask in your name. Amen. There once was a kingdom that was so large that the king had to rule it by proxy. The kingdom was so big that he had governors and people that took care of things for him. And he had this one little area, this one town that was just unruly. They didn't want to listen. They didn't like anybody. So they killed the first ambassador the king sent. And the king didn't like that. So he sent another ambassador. And they killed him. And he sent a third ambassador who probably didn't want to go at this point. You're one of those things like, I'm not going. And they killed him. And the king said, you know what? I'm tired of this. They're obviously not going to respect my ambassadors. I'll send my son. Surely they'll respect my son. And the son said, no, they won't. Don't call me Shirley. No. So the people of the town got word of this. And they started plotting amongst themselves. Said, listen now. Here's the thing. If we kill the king's son, he won't say to anybody else, and nobody will come. We'll be able to do whatever we want to do. And one guy said, you can't kill the king's son. Another guy said, well, you watch. We'll kill the king's son. But we can't just kill him. We got to make it look like it was his fault. So they hatched a plan. They put their little brains together, and they came up with a plan. The day came, the king's son showed up, and it was a lot of pomp and circumstance, man. They put on this huge, elaborate dinner for the king's son. All this stuff is going on. I mean, they started showering him with gifts. They gave him a Ferrari. They gave him all kinds of cool stuff. And it was just amazing. And the king's son said, you know, wow, you guys have really outdone yourselves. I was expecting you to kill me. But, he gave me all these gifts. So I tell you what, I have a gift that I can only give you, that only I can give you, and I'm going to give it to you. He pulls out a pen and a piece of paper, and he starts writing on the piece of paper. Now, in some places when they give you a gift and you don't give them as good a gift back, they get mad. Kind of like Christmas in America. You know? I bought him something cool, he got me socks. Next year he gets nothing. So the head of the feast, he doesn't even read the note. He just picks it up and he throws it out the window. You offended us. He's not worthy of our gifts. Get him, boys. And everybody in the room rushes the king's son. This was the excuse. They're going to kill the king's son. He didn't do what they thought he should do, so they're going to kill the king's son. But the king's son, he's not dummy. Jumps out of the window to his waiting horse and he rides off into the sunset. People are looking out the window. Hey! One guy looks at another guy and says, hey, why'd you let him park his horse there? Why'd you let him out the window? And they're bickering amongst each other. All this is going on. The piece of paper floats. Like the wind's carrying it like this. You know, last year was rain. This year it's wind. Next year,
snow.
Or frogs. It could be frogs. I mean, we're going to get some kind of pestilence. Anyway, the note came flittering down, and it lands amongst these three hags. You ever seen a hag?
No.
All marled up and all wheezing, and they look like they're gonna die, and they stink like garbage, and their clothes are all nasty and ratty, like me on a bad day, you know? They're all wheezing, and that was the best looking one that I just described. Yeah, you know, they had one tooth among the three of them, and it was bad. Hag number one, that's their name, hag number one, hag number two, and hag number three. There's no sense of giving them like their own names because nobody's going to call them anyway. So yeah, they just have the numbers. Hag number one picks up this note and he looks at it. He jogs in her head. She looks at it again. She tells the other girls, "We're rich, girls. We're rich." Hag number two said, "You don't look very rich to me." Hag number three says, "No, you look like, well, you don't look any different. You don't look rich." Hag number one says, "I'm telling you, girls, we're rich. It's this note. We're rich." Hag number two said, "Well, what's on the note?" So hag number one held it up and she read it to her. And it said, "To the bearer on demand, I will give you the desires of your heart." She looked at the other girls and she said, "Ladies, it's signed by the king's son. We're rich." Hag number two said, "We're rich." Hag number three, she's the pessimist of the group. She said, "They're never going to respect that note." Hag number one says, "It says to the bearer on demand. He has to respect the note. We'll take it to the castle and we'll see." Hag number two says, Hag number three says, "It's a long trip." Hag number two said, "Good point." Hag number one said, "Well, we're going to starve to death if we stay here." Hag number two said, "Good point." Hag number three said, "Well, we may die on the way." Hag number two, "Good point." Hag number one said, "We're going to die if we stay here. Let's go." Hag number two and three said, good point. So they set off. They set off to the king's palace. And it is a long hoof. I mean, it's a long way. They're trudging and they go up hills and down hills and they stop and they don't have anything to eat. And every time they're about to give up, every time they're just about done, Hag number one reaches, pulls out the note, and by now she knows it by heart. She's read it so many times, but she's got little notes in the margins, and she's got little things in there that said, "Hey, that's what this means, and this is what this means." And she circled the place where the king's son wrote, because that's the special part, the king's son, where he signed it. And after weeks of walking, they're trudging up this hill, and Hag number three says, I can't do it anymore, girls. Go on without me." They said, no, one more hill. We've got to almost be there." As they crested the top of the hill, as the fog began to clear out of the valley, there it was. Off in the distance, they could see the king's palace, and it was glorious. It was beautiful. All of a sudden, now they got a little spring in their step. Got a little get along. And they're running down the hill, and they're rolling a couple of times, and they're running down the hill, and they go and they knock on the door. And then, just like the Wizard of Oz, you know, that little sliding thing is open the door. What do you want? Because that's the sound you make when you see these three hags. If you saw any one of them by themselves, but if you saw all three of them together, you'd make a special long noise because it's like three layers of ugliness, right? What are you doing? Hag number two yells, "Show him the note! Show him the note!" Hag number one reaches in her pocket. She pulls out the note. She hands it to the guy, and he picks it up like this. "Where did you... stay right there." Boom. The whole thing shuts. You hear him running in the house. He walks into the throne room, and there's the king sitting on his throne, and the king's majestic, and he's sitting on his throne. And the guy walks up, "Oh, king, live forever. Oh, king, live forever. Oh, king, live forever." And the king says, "It sounds like forever since you started. What do you want?" Says, "Oh, king, live forever. You said that before. What do you want?" There are these three. Well, there are these three. There's the three things outside. And it's bad. But they brought this note. He says, "Well, let me see the note." He hands the note to the king. The king says, "To the bearer on demand, I'll give you the desires of your heart. And it's signed by you." And the king's son is standing right there. And he says, "Oh, dad. That's the note I told you about. Let him in." And the guy says, "Are you sure you want to let those three in?" The king's son said, "They have the note. Let him in." So he goes to the front door and he opens it up. He says, "All right, come in. Don't touch anything." They walk in the king's palace and it's gorgeous. It's beautiful, and it's huge. I mean, they can't even see the ceiling, hardly. It's just so high. It's so beautiful, and they're walking in, and they see all the magnificence around them. And they're ushered right into the throne room of the king. And the king's sitting on his throne, and there's the king's son, and he's a handsome dude. Never mind. he's a handsome guy. And the king says, son, about that note. King's son says, Dad, we gotta honor the note. He says, all right, what do you want? Hag number two, she can't hold herself. I want a house. I want my own house. I want to live a house, and I want a swimming pool, and I want all kinds of stuff. I want food, and I want stuff. King said, fine, give her a house far away. Take her off. He looks at hag number three, what do you want? She says, I want to live in the castle. King says, son, about that note. Dad? All right, give her a room on the far end of the castle. Finally looks at hag number one and says, what do you want? She said, well, before I tell you what I want, I have a question for you. All right, shoot. Your son, is he married? Uh-oh. And the king's son said, hey, Dad, about that note. And the king says, well, no. No, he's not married. She said, then I want to marry the king's son. King looks at her and said, you want to marry the king's son? He said, yeah. So the father looks over at his son and says, will you marry her? The king's son says, you know what, Dad? Yeah, I'll marry her. The king says, well, do you think she can go through the trial? Do you think she'll survive it? The king's son looks at her and says, you know what? I think she will. King looks at her one more time and says, all right, are you sure you want to marry my son? Because there's a long, rigorous test. She said, absolutely. How bad could it be? He says, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to throw you in the fountain. If you survive the fountain, I'm going to put you in a room, and then you're going to pursue my son. If you catch my son, you can have him. She thinks about it for a minute. She says, okay, let me think. Toss me the drink. I swim around for a minute. Chase him down. Let's roll. Before she can say another thing or take a breath, they pick her up and they throw her into this huge fountain. And she falls to the bottom of the fountain, and she's clawing, and she can't get her breath. She didn't have time to take a breath, and she's there standing there thinking, this is it. They drowned their hags here. I should have asked for a house. I should have asked to live in the castle. Why was I so stupid? Why does anyone want to marry the king's son? She's crawling. She's trying to grab onto the side, and there's nothing to grab onto. And then finally she feels herself lifting up. She breaks up out of the surface of the water. She takes this huge breath. She gets out of the water. She's leaning against the side of the pool. And she looks down. And some ain't right. Because the reflection she sees in the pool is not what it was. It's beautiful. Her clothes are shimmering white. She's got a smile on her face, and she's gorgeous. She looks herself in the water and says, man, I gotta tell my friends about this. They lead her away and they put her in a room full of mirrors, and she just stands gazing at herself in the mirror, observing how beautiful she is and how young she looks. She hears a knock on the door. The guy says, it's time to pursue the king's son. She said, well, that's tomorrow morning. He said, it is morning. She said, wait a second, have I been up all night? The guy says, I don't know, have you? Well, I'll do it tomorrow. The guy says, okay, but if you do it tomorrow, the deal's off. Whoosh. She opens the door, they lead her outside, and there she is, standing at the edge of a long road. There's the king's son on a horse. Beautiful white stallion. The king's son, looking mighty good. She's looking mighty good. She says, all right, where's my horse? He said, nope. You don't get a horse. So wait a second. You're going to run off on that horse, and I have to chase you, and if I catch you, well, that's not fair. How am I going to catch you with that horse? He just looks at her and he says, "I'm worth it." She said, "Yeah, I bet you are." She reaches out and she lunges at him because she's going to get the element of surprise. Whoosh, he's gone. Like I said, the king's no dumb. The king's son is no dumb. She says, "All right." She takes off running and she is hauling. I mean, she is going fast and she can see the horses behind getting bigger and bigger and bigger. She's chasing it. She's chasing it. She's chasing it. And then she blew a tennis shoe going about 40. And it got ugly after that. She rolled and, you know, hit the ground. She got up. She's all scraped and dirty. And she looks up and there's the king's son astride his horse in the middle of this briar patch. It's a patch full of stickers. She gets up and she's dirty and she's bloody. She's all scratched up and she says, "I'm not going in there. You're crazy. Look at me, I'm all dirty. This is a new dress. I'm not going in there." The king's son says, "I'm worth it. Go!" She takes off after him. Right into the bramble bush. I mean, she is getting scratched up. She's all, it's all horrible and scratching at her face and it's all made her hair all ratty and clothes are all torn up. She gets through the edge of the brambles and there in the distance in the desert is the king's son on top of his horse. She looks at him, she says, "That's it. I've run down the road, I got all dirty, I ran into the sticker bushes, I got all stickery, I'm not going out in the desert, you're crazy, it's over, forget you." Calls at her across the desert, "I'm worth it." She says, "You know, I wish you could say that." She takes off across it. She chased him out in the desert. She's losing energy and she quits running. She starts walking. And after a while, she falls and now she's crawling, and all she keeps hearing in the back of her mind is, "I'm worth it, I'm worth it, I'm worth it." She keeps crawling, and she finally can't crawl anymore, and she whispers to the wind. She lays her head down, and she dies. You remember Hagrid, right? She didn't want a house. She didn't want to live in the castle. She wanted the king's son. See, she believed. She wanted the king's son. The king's son gets down off of his horse and he speaks to the wind. And it's not the first time the king's son has spoken to the wind. He says, "Oh wind, what were her last words?" The wind answers, "Oh king, live forever. Here's what she said. I have loved you in life. I will love you in death. I will love you as long as you lend me breath. When death's dew lies cold on my brow, if I ever loved you, Jesus, I love you now." And then she died. Oh, King, live forever. If you look closely, you can see a tear forming in the king's son's eye. He walks over and he kneels next to Hag. "Thank you. And he breathes life in you." She kind of stirs. She looks up and there's the king's son face to face. She puts her arm around him. She holds him close. She says, "I've got you. And I'm never letting go." Do you see yourself in this story? See, because all of us are, well, we're one of the hags. Some of us are hag number three. We're so, hag group two, excuse me. We're so worried about all the stuff around us, and we want all this stuff, but we stop and we lose sight of what's important. Remember, any one of those three hags could have asked for the king's hand. But hag number two was worried about a house and about things, and she wanted all of this stuff. And I see people every day who are so worried about stuff. They forget that it's just stuff. I've checked, and there's no luggage rack on hers. There's no bumper hitch. You can't take it with you, is true. Hag number three was she was kind of there. She wanted to live close to the king, but not that close. She wasn't willing to do the work. And I see people all the time that want to be Christians. Well, they want to be called Christians. But they're not really willing to do the hard work that it takes. They're not willing to pursue the king's son. As long as they got one foot in, you know, I'm in the castle, that's close enough. It may be far, far away, but hey, I'm here. Maybe you're hag number one. And you want more than anything else to pursue the king's son. You want more than anything else to be close to Jesus. It's going to take pursuing him. You're going to give up things. You're going to get dirty. You're going to get scratched up. But he keeps telling you all the time, I'm worth it. I'm worth it. You know, I have never, ever regretted anything I gave up for God. I have deeply regretted things I held on to. I have held on to things and told God, you know, God, you can have 95% of me, but I got to keep this 5% over here. And then we bargain with God, don't we? All right, God, I'll give you 96. All right, 97, but that's my final offer. You know how much God wants of you? 100%. Lock, stock, and barrel. He is not willing to be second place. You've got to be willing to pursue the King's Son. And all you'll keep hearing the whole time is, I'm worth it. I'm worth it. And he is. I told you before, if you're really worried about what your life will be like after you finally decide to serve Christ, let me give you a science experiment. 90 days. Give me 90 days. Totally living for God. At the end of 90 days, if you can tell me that your life isn't better, that you've made a mistake, that you don't have peace that you never had, that your life isn't better because of this, I will gladly never bother you about Christ ever again. Now, does that mean you're not going to run through the desert in sticker bushes? Oh no, they're coming. But I promise you, the end of the sticker bushes, the end of the desert, is reward. Because Satan's going to go after you. I would have to improve just to be called lousy at basketball. I can't shoot. I can't dribble. I foul well. And I set a mean pick. I'll hack your hand bloody if I'm guarding you. That's about the best I get at basketball. I told you before, we had a basketball league at Faith Assembly when I was youth pastor there, and they had to let me play because it was my church and my league. They put me on a team, but they never passed me the ball because they weren't stupid. I got this weird two-handed shot. It's real ugly, and you know, little kids look at me and just say, dude, stop. Don't embarrass yourself. So consequently, nobody ever guarded me. Somebody on my team was getting a double team because I would be like over there, throw me the ball. And he was like, I was like Ron Artest from the Lakers. Don't throw him the ball. If he touches it by himself, he's got to get rid of it and give it to somebody else. One night, I don't know if the planets were lined up, if God finally looked down and said, I'm going to give Godsey one bright, shining moment, I started raining in baskets. Everything I threw went up and in. Like, over the hand, behind the back. I'm doing trick shots off my head. Everything went in. They guarded me. That's right. I got the ball. People were there. It wasn't like, okay, who's going to throw it to? It's a guy with the wrong colored shirt. Who's he going to throw it to? No. They had to guard me because I was going to shoot it. I went home and told my wife, hey, I got guarded tonight. You know what she said? You lie. See, when you decide to pursue the King's Son, when you decide to really follow Christ, guess what? You're going to get guarded. The devil's going to come after you. See, he didn't have to guard you before. You were his. He didn't have to mess with your life. You were his. Once you decide to follow Christ, though, everything changes. Here's the difference. The difference is God sees you through it. The difference is you've got somebody to rely on, somebody to hold to. Let's be honest. You're not following Christ this morning? Or afternoon now, I guess. You're not following Christ? How much worse can your life get if you follow him? I mean, could he really mess it up more than you have already? Well, probably not. Probably not. 90 days. Give me 90 days. A challenge. A double dog dare you. And see if what I'm saying isn't true. Finish the work
you have started in me. You've been listening to a presentation of Remnant. For more information, visit us at remnantchurchonline.com.